Hello, and welcome to Outsources, a weekly KGNU program with content created by and for queer communities in Colorado and beyond. I'm your host, Kelly Drumright, and in this episode, I'm actually coming to you solo from my office slash studio with a reflection about disability, ableism, connection versus isolation, and also the imagination that arises from being disabled amidst the COVID-19 pandemic, which, you know, experts are kind of on the fence about whether or not it's endemic now, or at least that's how the lifting of so many COVID protections makes a lot of us disabled folks feel. So in this episode, I will be sharing some of my experiences as a queer and chronically ill person, and I'm also going to be dialoguing with a book called Brilliant Imperfection, Grappling with Cure. This book was published in 2017, and it is by Eli Clare, who is a trans, white, non-binary, genderqueer, disabled author. Brilliant Imperfection has been on my bookshelf since maybe 2019, but I finally read Clare's book from cover to cover, and as the subtitle indicates, it's given me so much to grapple with, especially given our pandemic reality and all of these polemics that we've been seeing throughout this time, such as masking or not, vaccines and vaccine hesitancy, or straight up anti-vaccine sentiments, and also this general dis-ease about the whole returning to normal discourse. It's just, yeah, makes me very uncomfortable and is not a reality for myself and for a lot of other multiply marginalized folks, especially because quote unquote normal found us at the intersections of so many different forms of oppression. So anyway, that's a long way of saying this is a missive for me. Still inside, still shielding, still masking, still doing all of the protections and things.
Trying to be funny and stuck in a room. There isn't much more to say about it. Can one be funny when stuck in a room? Being in, trying to get something out of it. Try making faces. Try telling jokes, making little sounds. Oh, I was a kid who was stuck in his room. There isn't much more to say about it when you're a kid and you're stuck in your room. You'll do any old to get out of it. Try making faces. Try telling jokes, making little sounds. Well, well, look who's inside again. Went out to look for a reason to hide again. Well, well, buddy, you found it. Now come out with your hands up, we've got you surrounded.
In order to make this topic a bit more inviting to a larger audience, I thought I would provide a few definitions of terms before getting too much further into the conversation, because there's a whole vocabulary associated with disability and disability justice. I'm actually going to be referencing the awesome creative clothing company Rebirth Garments, their glossary that they have on their website. So a term that probably, I'm not sure for Outsources listeners, bears defining, but queer. What does queer mean? I want to just specify that it's a politicized term for LGBTQ plus folks. People who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, intersex, queer, questioning, asexual, agender, any of the people on this sort of gender, sexuality, wild journey spectrum. Another word that you'll hear me using is CRIP. This is short for cripple, and it's actually been reclaimed by physically disabled folks, much like how queer was once a slur that some people also claim now. So CRIP is this yet another politicized umbrella term for people with physical disabilities or disorders. And similar to how you come out, quote unquote, of the closet as queer, you can also come out as Crip. But the thing with disability is sometimes there are apparent disabilities, sometimes there are non-apparent disabilities, or sometimes they are semi-apparent, meaning that you can, quote unquote, tell that someone is disabled or not. Sometimes people who are disabled do not identify as Crip, just like how gay or lesbian people might not identify as queer. There's a portmanteau of these two words, queer Crip, which is, you know, where I find a lot of the most radical, interesting work is happening. And so this is a politicized umbrella term that includes gender nonconforming people, queer people, and all these identities that also have apparent and non-apparent disabilities, whether they're physical, psychological, intellectual, developmental. Okay, so now that we've talked about queer and Crip and queer Crip, I'm going to zoom out a little bit more and talk about this concept of ableism, which is also sometimes referred to as disableism. So T.L. Lewis describes ableism as, quote, a system that places value on people's bodies and minds based on societally constructed ideas of normalcy, intelligence, excellence, and productivity. These constructed ideas are deeply rooted in anti-blackness, eugenics, colonialism, and capitalism. This form of systemic oppression leads to people and society determining who is valuable and worthy based on a person's appearance and/or their ability to satisfactorily reproduce and produce, excel, and behave. And you do not have to be disabled to experience ableism. End quote. So ableism is an overarching system that makes it so, for example, rolling instead of walking. In our ableist world, walking is a form of movement that is taken for granted and is privileged as opposed to rolling or using other sorts of mobility aids. And there are structural barriers, quite literally, if there aren't curb cuts in the sidewalk, then there are barriers to access for folks. Another term that is helpful to understand is this idea of body-mind. Combination, as it sounds, body and mind. But this term actually challenges the whole dualistic concept from René Descartes. You've probably heard of it. I think, therefore, I am. And so this is a way of pushing back against the idea that the body and the mind are separate and can be experienced as separate entities. In fact, they are integrated and connected. So disability is this large, slippery category that, as I described earlier, can include physical impairments, intellectual disablement, neuroemergence, neurodivergence, chronic illness and sickness, or acute illness. In this conversation about disability, you might hear people talk about a medical model versus a societal model of disability. And when they're talking about this, this means simply that activists, disabled activists and scholars have developed this language, models of disability, in order to name these larger structures and various responses that cultures have to disability. For example, a moral model of disability would say that disablement or impairment is evidence that a person has or their family has sinned. An historical example would be the ugly laws, which jailed people for existing in public with physical disablement. A charity model of disability holds that disability is tragic and means that disabled people actually have nothing to contribute to society. And the responses that stem from this charity model are pity, institutional care, but really, you know, more like incarceration and imprisonment. This is often the case today with charities that are really interested in fundraising for research and nonprofits who use disabled people more as pitches to raise money. A big one is the biomedical or the medical model of disability. The Western medical industry, medical industrial complex, as you might hear it called, has been developed with this idea that disability means being sick and broken and means that you need a cure. And when the cure isn't possible, the person themselves is either blamed or viewed as better off not being around, part of the society. So healthcare doesn't have to be a medical model. It's a right for everyone. But this model of disability places disorder or disease in individuals rather than seeing it as a condition of disablement that is caused by social norms, which brings us to the social model of disability. This is created by disabled people, and it actually argues that, you know what? Variation is natural in human body minds, in all sorts of body minds, non-human ones as well. And these changes are shaped by our environments. And when we treat certain body minds as valuable or not valuable, and that's a social / political decision, not actually residing with anything actually in their body minds themselves. So disablement, or being disabled, is basically being deemed abnormal by society. And then society creates spaces and systems that only fit their idea of normal, which is often very white, very cisgender, very patriarchal, very sexist, very et cetera, et cetera. The social model argues that nothing is quote unquote wrong with disabled body minds. And really, it's the inaccessible society that is the issue. And that is where we need to look for the problems that need to be fixed. It's not about finding cures for disablements or for disabilities. A little bit more nuanced to this social model is this relational and political idea of disability reminds us that disability is always political, and it's always connected in what we would call an intersectional way, to use this term coined by Kimberly Crenshaw. And these systems both create more people with disabilities, more disabled people, and also they limit life for disabled people. Neurodiversity and neurodivergence, neuroemergence, is this idea that all body minds are different in how they work. No two brains are the same. These terms stemmed out of autistic communities who have also welcomed people with other cognitive injuries or epilepsy or mental health, learning disabilities, mental health disorders, etc. So it's become this umbrella term for, I guess, cognitive differences, you could say. These notes on terminology I've gathered from a few different places, including the Critical Disability Studies Collective, Sins Invalid, and Rebirth Garments.
Mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, tick tock, grub, hub, twinks, jocks, bears, cubs, Zoom is the new club, 6 feet, no hugs, still beat these mugs, sick beat, cut a rug, Joe Exotic is a bug, kitty cat, cat, tell me Carol Baskin, where is the husband, everyone's asking, stimulus check, everybody better cash in, mask and gloves, yeah, that's the new fashion, girl, what did that girl just say, girl, ooh. Girl, I don't go to work, work, I don't leave, I stay, stay. I don't care, I eat, eat, eat and sleep all day. Okay. And then I watch TV. Yeah, that's just the tea, hun tea. Yes, ma'am. Until they set us free. Free. I'ma let you see. What you gonna let them see? My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves, soap, scrubs. Ah! My mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves, soap, scrubs, mask, gloves.
You are listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and beyond. My name is Kelly Drumright, and I'm here talking about disability, ableism, reflections from a chronically ill queer person who's still inside. And I play that Todrick Hall song a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because when it says until they set us free, you know, this idea of being isolated for chronically ill folks and disabled people is nothing new, and actually something that people were experiencing before the pandemic happened. So I'm here in my studio reflecting with, around, through Eli Clare's book, Brilliant Imperfection, Grappling with Cure, which was published in 2017 and I think could not be more relevant now. Clare, in his book, mixes poetic writing with creative nonfiction, with theory, with historical analysis, and it all just comes together so seamlessly. Take this passage as an example. Here, Clare is talking about the notion of trouble and troubling. So the idea that body minds with certain impairments or conditions that result in disablement are defined as trouble. But we should really question what gets defined as trouble and to whose benefit. And here is a passage where Clare shows how the things that are considered quote-unquote normal and things that are to strive for are actually quite troubling, and perhaps our perspective is what really needs to shift. And this is something that CRIP people, disabled people, have access to a different kind of perspective. So this is Clare in the section, The Structure of Cure. I think of heterosexuality, whiteness, and wealth, particularly when two or more of these conditions exist together. The high rates of neglect and violence in heterosexual nuclear families could easily be defined as trouble. The multi-generational delusion that white people hold about our superiority could definitely qualify as trouble. The hoarding of resources in upper middle class and upper class homes, as reflected by an overabundance of clothing, cars, houses, food, money, and lavish vacations, could undoubtedly meet the criteria for trouble. And yet the, quote, heterosexual nuclear family disorder, or the, quote, white entitlement syndrome, and the, quote, wealthy greed dysfunction haven't been invented. Nor do I actually want them to be. Disorder, syndrome, and dysfunction have been used against far too many people. Still, heterosexuality, whiteness, and wealth simply aren't defined as trouble. I feel almost silly writing something so obvious. And yet, in a world where queer and trans people, people of color, and poor people pay an intense price every day for being deemed troubled and troubling, this obvious state of affairs needs to be called out. Queer and trans youth are kicked out of their families and homes. Immigrants of color are detained and deported in record numbers. Black men are 4 times more likely than white people to be diagnosed with schizophrenia. Poor people are called lazy, shiftless, and demonized for their poverty. The consequences for being deemed troubled and troubling pile up fast. And through it all, heterosexuality, whiteness, and wealth escape undiagnosed, no one locked up or kicked out solely because they're straight, white, or rich. Many answers to the question of who defines which realities as body-mind trouble are bound up with power and privilege. If I think about Clare's discussion of trouble in relation to my own life, I think about my relationship to mental illness like depression and anxiety, and how it produces trouble in my body-mind with psychosomatic symptoms, but also that trouble leads to information, or is coming from a process that's trying to keep me safe, a psychosomatic process that's trying to keep me well and safe. And clearly I'm not the only one who's dealing with these feelings at this time. Just a cursory, completely anecdotal example. A quick Google search about anxiety, post-pandemic anxiety, anxiety about returning to quote-unquote normal after the pandemic, returns about 140 million results from the American Psychological Association, from various reputable organizations and hospitals and National Health Service, there's a lot of information out there. So this is a collective phenomenon that's happening. Not to mention the fact that many of the people who contract COVID-19 have continue to have long-term effects and could be arguably newly disabled. And whether or not they identify politically as disabled, such as recognizing ableism around them and also believing in like a disability justice ethic. But what counts as normal and or natural? And what are we trying to go back to anyway? Eli Clare from 2017 even has some thoughts that I think are helping me deal with this idea of a quote-unquote new normal in our pandemic reality. In Brilliant Imperfection, Claire is discussing a lot this contradiction between abnormal and normal, natural and unnatural, that the medical industrial complex, ableism, foists upon all bodies. This section is called Normal and Natural. The medical industrial complex pushes normal weight, normal walking, normal ways of thinking, feeling, and communicating as if normal were a goal to achieve and maintain. Sometimes normal is attached to natural. Multinational corporations marketing natural beauty, natural strength, natural skin every day, as if natural were a product to sell. At the same time, white Western beliefs separate human animals from non-human nature and devalue the natural world. Coupled with capitalism, these beliefs drive an out-of-control greed for and consumption of coal and trees, fish and crude oil, water and land. Drive the destruction of what is natural. Drive the declaration of cornfields as more productive and necessary than prairie. In short, the white Western world both desires to be natural and destroys what is natural. Depending on the context, it makes no sense. The standards called normal, sometimes in tandem with natural, are promoted as averages. They are posed as the most common and best states of being for body minds. They are advertised as descriptions of who, quote unquote, we collectively are. A we who predictably is white, male, middle and upper class, non-disabled, Christian, heterosexual, gender-conforming, slender, cisgender. And at the very same time, these standards, which supposedly reflect some sort of collective humanity, are sold back to us as goals and products. It makes no sense. This nonsense couldn't exist without the threat of unnatural and abnormal. Whether focused on repairing disabled body minds or straightening kinky hair, lightening brown skin, or making gay, lesbian, and bi people heterosexual, Cure aims to make us as normal and natural as possible. The pressure is intense, created and sustained by the consequences and dangers of being considered abnormal and unnatural. Inside this pressure cooker, the promise of Cure is continually at work.
Trying to kill the vibe and all. So hope for change, chase a dream like a waterfall. Felt the lean, yeah, we seen how the tower falls. Close to chest, what I mean when the darkness falls. I think I had a premonition, chilling, dragging on the latest cushy. Pretended I was a killer, pray somebody push me. I'm just trying to be sincere without being so pushy. That's just my hang up with us. I don't rap by what you rap, that's just the difference in us. Don't show up how you show up, that your perspective is rough. Most of the time, what's inside is the scariest stuff. Hey, look, I'm screaming life is what you make it. Me in four walls while I'm trying to create it. And I've been inside while I'm holding on to loved ones, trying to show on the inside until the love done. I'm screaming life is what you make it. Me in four walls while I'm trying to create it. And I've been inside while I'm holding on to loved ones, trying to show on the inside until the love done. Hey, what a callous calculation. Spent a day in my mind, couldn't handle what I'm facing. It's not as simple as that. Some days you lose the faith. Fast as you get it
back, trying to keep it on track. My girl love me, so she say the truth. Gotta get to that level so I can have the same excuse. Guess I'm growing now, take a look at what I'm holding now. Gotta be sure there ain't no folding now. I had time to sit inside and think about it. Took a moment and figured out it. It couldn't matter if I was giving it everything that I had. The moment it took, then it made me laugh, cause I'm thinking that. I'm screaming life is what you make it. Me in four walls while I'm trying to create it. I've been inside while I'm holding on to loved ones, trying to show them the inside until the love done. I'm screaming life is what you make it. Me in four walls while I'm trying to create it. I've been inside while I'm holding on to loved ones, trying to show them the inside before the love done.
That is the song Inside by our very own Outsources Collective member, Stony Birds. This section that I'm going to read now is from the segment Moving Through Cure. And it grapples with how disabled people reject and claim disability and how this can be, it's fraught. It's alternatively liberating and also limiting. The act of choosing disability in the white Western world is never neutral, simply one choice among many, but rather pathologized, shamed, or sensationalized. In contrast, unchoosing disability is celebrated and framed as a collective imperative. Beyond this binary of choosing and unchoosing lives the many ways we claim disability and chronic illness. We make peace. We accept. We celebrate. We let go. We find pride. We live with ambiguity. We face mortality. We reject pity and overcoming. We build community and grow accustomed to isolation. We seek interdependence. We turn away from our expectations of hyper-productivity. We insist on what we know about our own body minds. We learn to balance loss and pride. We deal with frustration and pain. I'm loath to define claiming. Sometimes it lives near an active choosing of disability. Other times, it shares much in common with unchoosing. Often, it is laced with contradiction. I am so grateful to Eli Clare for writing Brilliant Imperfection. It's such a gift to, you know, folks of us who are in isolation a lot of time, for various reasons, but a lot of the time because of disability. And just his work is incredible. It's so necessary. And I can't wait to read more books by queer, crip, amazing authors, and hopefully share some of their ideas with you. You're listening to Outsources on KGNU. If you have news or events related to the LGBTQ plus community that you'd like us to share on Outsources, or if you have questions or comments about tonight's program, please email outsources@kgnu.org. Join us next week, Monday at 6:30 p.m. on KGNU for another episode of Outsources. Or listen anytime after the broadcast at kgnu.org/outsources.